forever. Dog.
Comic books, comic time. Writers and artists are on the line. They make a splash as a comic's read and take us on a trip behind the spread. Watch out for comic book commentary. Spinning or winning inside, fix how they got a hot idea. Narrative, character, visual tricks, and onomatopoeia. It's comic book commentary.
Hey everybody, my name is Cullen Bunn, and I am the writer of Roku from Valiant Comics. This is the first creator commentary I've done on a comic book, so please bear with me. I will do my very best to make it enlightening and entertaining, I hope, as we talk about the first issue of Roku. This book, as I said, I'm the writer. There's art by Roman F. Box, colors by Stefan Petrou, letters by Dave Sharp. It is edited by Lisa Hawkins and the associate editor, David Minchell. Roku, if you're not familiar with the character, has been around in the Valiant universe for a little while. She has always been portrayed as a villain or anti-hero. She's always been a supporting character to other mainstays in the Valiant universe. So with this book being it's her first solo title, I wanted to make sure that we show her off in the very best way. So we made the decision early on that no other Valiant superstars, so to speak, would appear in the series, and that we would really give Roku her time to shine. So as I go through the issue, the first issue, I'm going to keep the script open on my screen as well. Sometimes that helps me figure out what I was trying to do. I have not looked at this issue since I received my comp copies, so I haven't seen it. I haven't looked at the issue since I did a lettering pass on it and did the final proof. So the first page, well, right at the beginning of the script, I wrote a note to Ramon saying, when drawing the story, try to keep movies like The Killer, Replacement Killers, and John Wick in mind. Lots of action, a breakneck pace, make it violent and fun. And as we enter the issue, the first page, it's very obvious, I think, that this is sort of a tribute to movies like The Killer and The Replacement Killers. We have this sort of iconic scene of Roku going into this nightclub, this packed nightclub, looking for prey. And in fact, if you're reading the issue, I would suggest now is the time to turn on Keep Hope Alive by Crystal Method, because it's definitely the music that was playing in my head as I wrote this scene. So we have Roku going through the club. We enter into some inner monologue. Inner monologue is, there's a love-hate relationship for me with inner monologue. I write it a lot, especially with solo books, when I want to really dig into a character, get their thoughts across. But it is so difficult to write for me. It's my least favorite thing to write. And in fact, I wrote this script. The first pass of the script did not have this inner monologue in it. And then when I was looking through it during my editing, I decided it needed something a little more, and I added this back in. But inner monologue's so difficult for me. It's almost like writing poetry, and I am no poet. So it's here, and I use it throughout the issue, but I don't like any of it. Or I didn't like writing it. I thought it turned out great. So as we move on to page two, we get our first real, the real entrance for Roku. And I could have done a splash page here, but I tend to avoid splash pages and use them very, very sparingly. If I use one, it's got to be something really, really big that needs to come across. In fact, I doubt I used a splash page in this issue. I don't remember writing one, but maybe I did. But the important thing for me in this first scene is getting across exactly what Roku describes in the inner monologue, which is that she's the deadliest woman in the world. So I really wanted to show off how lethal she was. And we see right on the second panel, she starts killing fools. And I'm going to, on a little piece of paper here, I'm going to keep track of these deaths as best I can and see what we end up with at the end of the first issue. But Rokush jumps into combat with these guys, her hair lashing around. I'm certain that living hair is not easy to draw, and Ramon did a great job with it. It's a lot easier to write that hair, that someone's hair is turning into blades and stabbing weapons and razor-sharp tendrils, than it is to draw it, I'm sure. But Ramon really brought it to life here. And I also love the colors. Really kind of gives it this sort of neon club look, and I like that a lot as well. So on 2 and 3, we have Roku leaping into battle, thinking about the differences between hunter and prey, and friends and enemies. And as she's getting these ideas across in her head, she's continuing to kill these henchmen. On page 4, we see a very simple, she takes out her target, the leader of this group, and she snaps his neck very simply, very cleanly. And then right there in the second panel is the first time I actually name that group, the Jade Union, which maybe is a little bit of a strange thing. This group appears in the series in the first issue, just so they can pretty much be wiped out in the first 5 pages. But I thought it was important to name the group. One of the things I wanted to do with the series is really dig into this bigger crime, this underworld for the Valiant universe. And one of the ways I wanted to do that was introduce these different groups, these different concepts, by name in many cases, to show that there's a lot going on in the world, things that you may not realize, groups working in the shadows, even if they only appear in a few issues. Naming them, I felt, gives the world of this underworld more legitimacy. So, on page 5, we get the first taste of Roku's telepathic ability, where she has these thugs that she just says helpless. And they drop their guns. And this is the end of that first scene. And the things I wanted to accomplish, like I said, was just to get an idea of Roku's powers and abilities without really spelling them out in captions or dialogue. And I think that comes across. And I also wanted to get this idea of Roku as this deadly killer, and this idea of on page 4 and 5. Where she has no conscience and no morality, and that she operates without regret. And that's something that we explore as the issue in the series moves along. On page 6, we move the story ahead a little bit into New York City. The other thing I really wanted to do with this book is have us see Roku in action in multiple places. And while the majority of the book takes place in Russia, I thought moving it, Hong Kong to New York and then to Russia shows us that Roku is definitely a globetrotter. And we introduce this character of Mr. Arvest, who acts as a go-between between mercenaries and killers like Roku and these faceless crime lords. And again, these holographic windows that are floating around, Mr. Arvest represents faceless sort of Illuminati of crime lords who are hiring individuals like Roku for various reasons. On page 7, we get a little more look at these faceless crime lords. Roku asks who they are. And Arvest tells them, they are people who appreciate privacy, and they're willing to pay more for that privacy. So Roku is in the know to the degree that she needs to be. And I wanted the idea that maybe even Arvis doesn't know exactly who these individuals are, these faceless power players. But in this scene, we have a very quick, you've accomplished one mission, taking out the Jade Union. Now we need you to go and retrieve this weapon that's going up for auction. And page 8, we immediately jump to Moscow, where the majority of the story takes place from here. We jump Roku over to Moscow. We get to see her. I thought it was fun to have Roku in plain clothes a little bit. We don't see her much in plain clothes. We haven't seen her in plain clothes a lot in other Valiant books. She's always in her, you know, her costume. But this book afforded us just a little bit of opportunity to see her not necessarily out there killing people, although there's plenty of opportunity for that as we move ahead. Moving into page 9, I introduce a new character who is Elena. She's Roku's handler and liaison in Moscow. She, to some degree, she will be a character, a comic relief element to the series. She's obviously right away this terrible disguise she's wearing of this, you know, these sunglasses and this headband, trying to be inconspicuous in this nice hotel. And I get the idea that she's kind of failing at it. She is I think in that. So the description I gave Ramon in the script for that panel 2 is that seated in the couch nearby is a small mousy woman. She is a comical picture of trying too hard to blend in and remain unseen. So, and I think he nailed that concept right away. She's trying too hard to be inconspicuous, but she is the person who arranges Roku's accommodations and as we'll see in a little bit, helps her in her mission, which begins immediately on the page 10 and 11 double page spread. And while I say that I don't like splash pages, I do use double page spreads a lot. I like what they allow me to do in the book. They spread the book out in a different way, and you get to really see the scope of something like this auction. And we're seeing all these high rollers, you know, drinking and having fun, waiting to bid on these weapons, a variety of which, some are conventional, some are mass destruction. The interesting thing here is that Roku does not know exactly what she's after, and we have Elena kind of running intel from this van outside and monitoring Roku, keeping track of where she is and what she's doing, and even Elena says she does not know what they're after. And one of the things I wanted to show here is that Roku doesn't necessarily trust anyone, in that when Elena says, "If I knew more, I'd tell you," and Roku says, "I know that," and Elena's thankful for it, but Roku says, don't be thankful. I simply read your mind when we first met." So she doesn't really trust anybody. She's always always sizing everyone up and figuring out where they're coming from. The next page, we get into a group of guards who are waiting, keeping watch, bored, playing cards, and we have this one who stops what he's doing, takes his key card out and just swipes it, and it sort of takes everybody by surprise. They don't know why he's doing this, and then we quickly see Roku jump into combat again, kicking, breaking necks, stabbing people in the head, And then we realize that she has telepathically taken control of this guard, and she takes the card from him and says, you know, well done, your work's finished. And then she has him shoot himself. And this ties right back into Roku has no sense. She has no moral compass. She doesn't necessarily see right and wrong the way we do. She is a hired killer. When she's hired, she takes that job very seriously, and she does the work, and it's a no questions asked, and morality doesn't enter into the equation for her. And one of the things about Roku is she in her past, and I didn't want to dig too much into this in this first issue, because I wanted it to be a book that if you had never read a Roku story, you wouldn't need to. You could just jump into this book and enjoy it. But in Roku's past, she has been killed and brought back to life by this mysterious assassins organization. But her memories have been erased. And along with her memories, much of what makes her human. So that's one of the reasons she's so cold. And we do dig into that idea that she has no memory and no moral compass. But again, I didn't want to do all that in this first issue. I didn't want the first issue to be tons of pages describing Roku's origins, because I think that only would slow the story down and maybe even confuse people who haven't read, you know, Roku before. So after she has this poor, hopeless guard shoot himself, she moves on into the building, and she gets an alert from Elena that she's picking up a strange heat signature, something moving fast. And then right on page 14, we have the introduction of another character, although we don't see her yet, as this invisible force hits Roku out of nowhere. And I feel like this is a tough thing to draw. It sounds silly, you know, an invisible character should be the easiest of characters to draw, but it's not, because you have to get this idea of motion and of action, even though there's no one there to represent it. So again, Ramon is really, you know, showing off here when he has Roku get hit out of nowhere, and we have the little burst of energy that shows that she's getting hit, and she leaps down. We have Elena radio right in on the radio with her, so that she can talk a little bit to somebody other than herself. But on this page, we have Roku getting hit a couple of times, telling Elena to shut up, and we have her comic element there where Elena's response is, I'll be shutting up now. On the next page, this is where it all gets summed up, that there's an invisible operative here, a stealth operative. And Roku, in order to find her, just lashes out with her hair, these blades slinging around, and she cuts her unseen opponent. And there we have the first on-panel appearance of Ember One, who is a new character, someone I'm introducing into the Valiant universe, a stealth operative, an assassin to be a foil for Roku. Like Roku, she is enhanced in different ways with speed and strength and endurance, but she's also outfitted with crazy tech like this. Invisibility stealth suit that allows her to blend into her surroundings. And the important thing here is that Roku and Ember One know each other, or at least Ember One knows Roku. She names her Angelina in the last panel. And this is a character that Roku doesn't know. She doesn't know her at all. the only character she doesn't know as much as she doesn't know herself either. So this Ember One definitely has sort of one up on Roku. And traditionally, you'd probably name a character like this in this type of comic. Ember One would appear, and someone would name her. There'd be an ID tag, or Ember One would even say her own name. But I didn't want to do that here. I really wanted Roku to be in the dark about who this character is. I didn't want her to even for a short while. I didn't want her to know anything, and I didn't want the reader to know any more than Roku did at this point. So it was intentional that I didn't name her right away. But we jump into a fight between Ember One and Roku. We get to again, Ember One's hinting that she used to that Roku used to go by the name Angelina, and we get to see a little bit of her strength as she catches this stabbing blade of hair and just holds it there. And we continue that fight into page 17, where we also get to see Roku attempt to use her psychic abilities. We've seen her use them a couple of times now. We know they're effective, but here we get to see she tries to use them, and Ember One says, I have psychic, I have psi blockers. You can't stop me. So again, we're getting another hint that she's been enhanced with other abilities to make her more efficient and more deadly. And this is a little bit of a switcheroo, because we've had her throwing Roku around and Roku trying to get through to her and not be successful. But here on this last panel, we get this sort of fun image where Roku says, it wasn't you I was trying to contact with my psychic abilities. And then on page 18, we see more guards coming down the hallway. They open fire, and Ember One has to return fire and trying to take them out. And the alarm is going off. The klaxon is sounding. And Ember One is telling her, good luck getting out of here, now that you've sounded the alarm. But when she turns, Roku's already gone. And we get sort of this comic moment where Ember One thinks to herself, God, I hate her. And we get more of this idea that she knows Roku. There's history there. And we're definitely going to be exploring that history as the story continues. But on page 19, we have Roku running down the hall of this facility, and Elena's directing her through her monitoring and satellite monitoring from the van. We get to see Roku kill a couple of other dudes off panel in a lethal way. And as she's doing this, we have Roku's inner monologue where she's talking about being a killer and being a murderer and being an assassin. And when you want to retrieve a weapon, or when you're dealing with weapons, you send a weapon. And that's our last page. And hey, I was wrong. There is a splash page in the issue. And it's an interesting splash page for me, because it's not a big bombastic moment. It's not an explosion. It's not a car crash. It's not some supervillain appearing out of nowhere. But on the final page, we get to see Roku facing the asset that she's been sent to retrieve. And it's just a little girl. And she's actually even in this room that looks like a kid's room. Very, very quaint. There's a coloring book on the floor. And the girl introduces herself as Mary Beth. And she knows Roku right away, which is odd for a little girl of this age. She looks at Roku and says, you're Roku, right? But that wasn't always your name. So we wanted this idea that this innocent-looking little girl knows far far more than she should. And I thought it's fun to have this big splash page when it's just this little girl. Obviously, this girl's going to play a huge role in the story going forward. She's going to help set Roku up for this sort of exploration of her own morality. And in this first issue, there's a preview of issue two, where we get to see more about Mary Beth, where they're explaining what her abilities are. I won't necessarily dig into that, even if you know, some people skip those previews. If you're not a preview reader, I won't spoil it if you're going to wait for the second issue. But if you are a preview reader, you get to see a few pages from Roku 2. You get to see several other assassin groups coming in, a lot more violence starting to unfold in issue 2. And right there at the end of the end of that page, we get this stinger where it says next issue, enter the Minister of Blades. And the Minister of Blades is going to be a fun character, much like Ember One. He's a new character who will enter the story. And my hope is that characters like Ember One and the Minister of Blades will become mainstays in the Valiant universe, not just in Roku, but in other books as well, so that they can be, foils and guest stars and villains in other Valiant titles. So definitely stay tuned for him. He's a fun character. He's going to be a lot of trouble for Roku, but she's going to have her hands full anyway with all these other competing groups of assassins and Ember One and characters like that. So that's just a real quick run through of this first issue, and kind of some of the things I was thinking about as I was writing it. Like I said, it's a fast paced issue. There's a lot of action. I wanted it to be a lot like an action movie, and I wanted a lot of violence and bloodshed and when I didn't mention the cover, and we should have mentioned the cover, the one I'm looking at is the Dave Johnson cover, which is this great image of Roku, just her face, and there's blood on her face, the color which matches her hair, and it's dripping down. And what's really cool is if you look really closely, there's these little skulls in her eyes, which is just a great image, her hair dripping blood from these blade-like tips. So I should have mentioned that cover right off, but there we go. And then, as promised, I did a quick rundown of the deaths in this issue. Your count might be different than mine, but it looks like we have 8 neck wounds where Roku stabbed someone through the neck. 7 neck cracks where she used her hair or a kick or some other attack to snap someone's neck. She stabbed 3 people in the head, and she had one person she had shoot themselves. So, looks like about 19 deaths in this first issue. 19 gruesome deaths. And I can tell you that is a drop in the bucket to what we get in the next issue. So a lot more death, a lot more exploration of Roku as she interacts with Mary Beth and Elena and Ember One and all these other assassins. So I hope you'll check that out. I hope if you haven't read the first issue, give it a shot. And I hope you enjoy the next one. So thank you guys so much for coming along with me. Hopefully we can do this again sometime soon. Forever
Dog. This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. And mastered by Anna Rubinova. For more original podcasts, please visit ForeverDogPodcast.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram at ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.